Greetings, everyone. This is Christopher Rudy with Cosmic Love, and today it's my great pleasure to have on Michael Brown, who's a writer with two books, one, The Presence Process, which is doing extremely well in the U.S., and Alchemy of the Heart, which just came out and it's in the second printing already. And we have Michael on, I believe. Are you there, Michael?
I am here.
Good to hear your voice.
Thank you.
Michael's in Princeton, New Jersey, speaking. I'm here in Paradise Valley, Montana. And I understand Michael also has several CDs and DVDs out. We're going to be talking about what he does with this process. And this process, he goes into that in both The Presence Process and The Alchemy of the Heart. And we have a little bit of an orientation for those who are coming from my bio page on Cosmic Love at BBS Radio. There's a picture of Michael, a little background story. If you can open another window in your web browser while you're listening, you could look at that while we're talking. Otherwise, Michael, I'm just going to go into this. I'm really fascinated with your background, from your shamanistic experiences, your whole story is very interesting, and how you've been working with Namaste Publishing, who's done the books by Eckhart Tolle, and quite a phenomena with the shows they've done on him recently with with the seminars.
Right, with Oprah.
Oprah, yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess you're a busy guy these days. Have you doing a lot of book signings?
I don't do book signings, actually. I don't do book signings at all. The only place I sign books is at presentations, because I don't fancy myself as much of a bookseller.
Uh-huh.
I don't hang out in the bookstores. But I do book signings. I'm going around at the moment doing presentations. What I do is I write the books out of experience, and the experience is part of the work that I do with myself on a daily basis. But then I go out and I share these insights with people. One of the ways I just stand up there and talk about it without notes or anything, and being with people in that way helps me to clarify the insights and receive feedback. And I do one-on-ones with people, and then at a certain point, whatever's coming up in the presentation, then I put in a book.
So
both of the books are coming out. I don't write a book and then go out and do the presentation on it. I do it the other way around.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, remember in the days when we used to have bands that would go on the road and play music for a couple of years and then go into a studio and record an album, and every track on the album was just great. But now we have bands that do an album in the studio that they wrote 2 weeks ago, and then they go on the road, and then they play that, and, you know, there might be one catchy song on the radio, but on the album, but the rest has really not got much depth to it, because they're doing it back to front these days.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, they want to be an instant replay machine after they do the studio work.
Yeah, I like the stuff that I write about, not to just come out of thinking about it, but actually out of a physical, mental, and emotional experience of it, and a conversation I've been having with people, and of course doing it to myself and coming out of my own exploration of my own experience.
Well, your experience and what you talk about in your book, this processing of integrating the focus of consciousness through the emotional body, that really fascinates me. And I was reading how this imprinting of emotions from the formative years, from in childhood, the inner child, the inner family, those experiences are like an overlay that is under the surface and in so much of our behavior. Could you go into that a little bit?
Right. Well, I can use my experience as an example. You know, this work, I used to be in the music industry, and I guess that's where my music analogy comes from, but I used to be in the music industry, and I was going along, you know, just having a great life, and one day I got smacked by this neurological condition, which was incredibly painful, and it was immense amount of pain to all the nerves in the one side of my face, in my eyes and ears and nose and neck, and And I would have these attacks about 8 times a day, and they would last for up to an hour. And I would literally bang my head on concrete just to deal with the pain.
Wow.
And so I had that going on, and of course I couldn't ignore that. And I went around, you know, I did what most of us do is we go and try and do something physical about it. You know, if we have something wrong with us, we want to cut it out, sedate it, numb it, control it.
Right.
We believe if we can get it out of our physical reality, it doesn't exist anymore. So I took that approach for quite a few years, and nothing came of it. I tried all the medications, cortisone injections, you know, had my wisdom teeth pulled out, you name it. And then I kind of started going more into the alternative therapies and started looking at what I call the metaphysical world, which is, to me, the mental approach to things as opposed to purely physical.
Uh-huh.
And I looked at Reiki and massage and all these different things that I started, aromatherapy and sound therapy and light therapy, and I still didn't have any way of impacting this condition. And one day, you know, a woman pointed out to me that there was an emotional component to our experience, and that was a very causal point to the quality of our experience. And so, you know, through various experiences and stuff, I started to take a look at my own emotional experience. And what I noticed was that underlying my very painful syndrome, I started to discover an immense amount of rage. For me, it was specifically a lot of rage and then under that grief. But there was fear, anger, and grief. And only when I started to explore that and realize that the fear, anger, and grief I was experiencing right now in my life had nothing to do with now. It was reflected at this moment. But actually, I could follow the trail of it all the way back to my childhood, and I could see the points at which it was imprinted into me there. And only when I went to those causal points and integrated those did my physical circumstance shift. And so I realized that I was imprinted as a child, the energy body or the energy in motion body, or we can call it the emotional body. By the time I was 7, my emotional body or my energy body already had a set pattern in it. And that pattern where there were obstructions, you know, in the mental body causing fear, anger, and grief in the physical world brought it up as circumstances that irritated me, annoyed me, upset me. But that I had to go to the causal point of it to actually impacted in a real and irreversible way. And so that's just a brief way of how I discovered the importance of the emotional components of my experience.
Wow. And part of that experience, you spent some time with, that's what I refer to as your shamanistic experience.
Right, yes. And that was a revelation to me because most of my shamanic experience, I had various things, but most of it I spent training as a fire chief in the Native American church. And I did that over a period of about 4 years. And the Native American church ceremony is a 12-hour ceremony. And doing it over a period of 4 years, I started to notice that the intent of the ceremony took our awareness from being very physical at first, because these were peyote ceremonies that we did, highly disciplined. I used to be in the army, and these were more disciplined than any of the experiences I had in the military. And what I noticed was that as we were entering these 12-hour ceremonies, we'd spend about 3 hours in the physical, then we'd enter 3 hours of very mental stuff going on with everybody, and then we'd get to midnight, and I was the fire chief. I would bring in the water, and the moment that water would come in, we'd enter a very emotional period. And then in the early hours of the morning, sort of like 4 o'clock in the morning around there, we used to have what was called main smoke, which was, why are we really here in this meeting tonight? What brought us here? What is it that we need to receive by being here? And we entered what I called a very vibrational experience, which took us all the way to the morning. So I noticed that we were always going along this pathway from the physical through the mental, through the emotional, and towards an impact of the vibrational. And then I also noticed that all religions and meditation and spiritual paths do the same thing. For example, meditation, you first learn the physical posture, and then you get a mantra. Say, for example, you want to bring in awareness of your true home, you might have a mantra that says, home, or something like that, right?
Yeah.
So that clarifies your mental body, and the intent is to have an experience, and you only really know you have an experience if you feel something happening. So it was impacting our emotional body, so we were moving again from the physical to the mental to the emotional, and this was a pathway that was a reversal of the way that I noticed that I came into the world. And so the shamanic journey revealed to me the pathway of returning towards authenticity, integrity, and intimacy. And so that was one of my big discoveries through shamanism. And after that, after I had that realization of this movement from physical through the mental into the emotional to achieve vibrational experience, only after that did I realize the other pathway of awareness was, you know, vibrational in the womb, emotional of childhood, mental of going to school in teenage years, and then very physical experience of being an adult. And that there was a pathway coming into the world going from vibrational, emotional, mental, physical. But once we arrive in the world physically, our search for awareness or consciousness reverses that pathway. And then we go from being physically present to mentally clear to emotionally integrated, and the emotional integration opens the vibrational to us. And seeing both those pathways is out of that I created what's called the presence process, which enables us to use that pathway as a means to enter our emotional body, to see what the authentic condition of it is, and to begin impacting it with our awareness.
Wow. Well, so you're really, it's a process that integrates the, what's sometimes referred to as the four lower bodies, spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical.
Absolutely.
And
to me, it's all about integration.
And it's interesting how how we come in to this, you might say, the integration in the womb, and then as we come out, the integration, you know, vibrationally, or atom cells, electrons, and emotionally, you know, mentally, physically, but there, I mean, there's an integration of the nervous system and then the physical body. There's a whole progression, and then it's like then we go through these cycles of, like you say, we come out, and then we grow up emotionally, mentally, we go into the physical world as adults, and then we get enlightenment, and we go back and reprocess. We reprocess, or what do you call reparenting?
Well, I don't know what I would call that. I'd call that integrating it. In other words, bringing it all together. We go from an or situation, I want this or that, to an and, I want it all, I want to feel everything. We go from trying to feel better to get better at feeling. What do I like? So, but that integration experience is interesting because I see that also mirrored in the evolution of the human as a species that is evolving. So, for example, when we evolve as a species, we go backwards along that pathway of awareness as a species. So we begin in the physical, like which we can call the cave period of you know, we need shelter, we need food, we need warmth, we need to reproduce. So we're in a very physical period. And then we develop tools to a point that we have iPod, Apple Mac, all these things, right? We have all these mental developments. And then we go through an emotional development. And it's the emotional development, the awakening of the heart and of felt perception that enables us to realize or have a capacity to contain an awareness of the vibrational. So the vibrational to me is always here. We're not making it happen. We're just evolving as a species. We first need a vehicle to be present in, so that's the physical body. And then we need to navigate ourselves. We use the mental body for navigation. And then we need a fuel that has a capacity to awaken us to vibrational, to the vibrational realm that's all around us, and that is the heart through self-perception. And I see that the human species has gone through the physical, we've completely gone mental, we've done the mental so much we're all completely mental, and now we're entering emotional body integration, and the intent of that is to realize the vibrational while we're in the material world. Whereas if someone pretty groovy once said, to be in the world but not of it.
But not of the world, yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm really fascinated with this process, and I like to think in terms of not just individually but what's going on in the collective consciousness.
Right.
Of a world that's kind of at a very adolescent stage with this instant everywhere interactive connection with net reality, you know, the internet.
Yes, yes.
And how there's a processing going on in the collective consciousness that's accelerating.
Absolutely.
And I really have a really strong sense that we're on the threshold of, just like the internet's at an adolescent stage, humanity is just on the threshold of maturing to an awareness of how we're conscious.
Yes.
And beginning to conscientiously process our stuff.
Right, right.
I mean, it's all the stuff's coming out on the internet. It's all there. You know, the whole history of dark and light and the processing that's going on. It's accelerating, and as it accelerates, more stuff comes up. These emotional traumas from our childhood, you might say, but in the collective consciousness of humanity, it's like there's these collective traumas from 9/11 all the way back, you know.
Well, all of these, to me, you see, when we live at a causal point, or to me, when we live at the heart center, or we live at the self perception as the causal point, if I live at the physical, if I live at the physical as my causal point, I will look at 9/11 and I'll say, okay, who are the people that did this, right?
Yeah.
And I will look for physical evidence of that happening. If I live at a mental body state, if I'm slightly more aware and I'm more functioning from a mental state, I will say, well, what were the agreements, or what were the philosophies, or what were the understandings that brought about this occurrence?
Right.
But if I live at an emotional body awareness, I will know that the cause of 9/11 was the same fear, anger, and grief that caused people to hide under their desks during nuclear bomb test drills when they were in school many years ago, and that trauma never got integrated, which is a trauma that came from even before that, but now it's coming up as 9/11, and every time it comes up, it's coming up as an opportunity to emerge and see, but what we do is we go into emergency, right?
Yeah,
and so we project it outwards instead of processing it inwardly. So even the Iraq war is a memory. The Iraq war is a memory of a war between Persians and Christians that happened a long time ago,
yep.
And now it's coming up for processing. And what happens is, if we don't know what the memory is the felt aspect of the experience. If I think that, what I do is I project it onto outside of me, and a good example to see this is that the emotional body, remember the old slide projectors? That you would put in a slide and you would project it onto a wall and you would put your slides in there. We have more modern ones now. We use computers. But a way to look at it is that the emotional imprinting from the age 0 to 7 is what is on that slide. And what we do is between the ages of 0 and 7, that slide is put into the slide projector. And that's the imprinting. And we will see the world according to our imprinting through the lens of that energetic experience. And what we do then is we don't take care of the slide. We go to the wall and we try and change it on the wall where the slide has been projected. In other words, when we're physically transfixed by the world, which is our adult condition, we clean the mirror to get rid of our pimples, or we move the radio around the room to try and change stations. And what the work is that I'm very fascinated with is, how do you go in and actually at first alert someone that they're looking in the mirror, and then help them to see where the pimples are on themselves and give them the self-empowering so that they can go and take care of that instead of trying to clean the mirror or fight with the mirror. Because if you fight with the mirror, it's going to smash into shards and you're going to get all cut up. And that's what's happening with these memories that are coming up in the world, because at the moment our global situation is really a cleansing of our collective human emotional body. But most of us don't realize this, and so we're projecting our experiences out into the world, and then we're going to war or battling with these projections, which actually takes us absolutely nowhere. It just makes us very self-destructive beings.
Well, I'm, from what I understand it, there's the same that goes on with the life cycle of an individual, you know, with the...
Right, right.
It goes on the life cycles... of ages, you know, like the,
yes.
the records of the Piscean age are coming full cycle on the cusp of Aquarius.
Absolutely.
And the emotional body and the emotional records of the last 2,000 years.
Yes, and longer.
And longer. The records from before that. It's interesting.
Yeah.
I was reading the other day something on the genealogy of George Bush going all the way back to the one of the original leaders of the Crusades that went into Jerusalem.
Yes.
And I'm wondering how much of his genetics, you know, have maintained the record or the record of. This MIDI scenario being outpictured or outplayed or, you know, recycled,
right,
like an emotional record that's in his who knows. I mean, you know, I know genetics do carry records, you know, going back, and the records aren't just physical, they're emotional also.
Right. And to me, that's what this current age is about. It's actually an opportunity to cleanse this emotional content, and to me that's how the wheat is separated from the chaff, because those that cleanse their emotional component evolve, they become evolutionary. Those that don't and instead project it on the world and blame the world for their state, they become revolutionaries. And revolutionaries, the word says what it is, to revolve. They always go back to the same circumstances. So if the work that I'm very fascinated about is evolutionary work, not revolutionary work.
Evolutionary work, right.
Yes.
Well, 90% of the word revolution is evolution.
Yeah, well, you see, the thing about the difference between an evolutionary and a revolutionary is that a revolutionary uses the same means to liberate themselves as they perceive being used to oppress them. An evolutionary uses a completely different means to liberate themselves than is perceived being used to oppress them. In other words, in this world, a revolutionary will always blame another for their experience, and they will enter a mental and a physical behavior to try and manipulate the experience so that they feel better. An evolutionary will use the mental and physical as a mirror to see what's going on inside of themselves at the causal point, and then they will journey in and make an adjustment to that causal point, which will in turn adjust their mental and physical experience. So they will do inwardly that I do unto myself as I would have happen outside of me. I don't do outside of me as I would, I don't manipulate the world so that I feel better. I actually focus on trying to get better at feeling and figure out, right.
Yeah. That point it really is kind of embodied in that one point introduction to your book,
right,
of Alchemy of the Heart, where the difference between felt perceptions and emotions.
Yes,
there's a parallel there between revolution and evolution. You mentioned that the language of the heart is felt perception, and how this alone can truly steer us in the right direction, but it's not the same as our emotions. There's a difference here.
Yes.
And my read on that is that what you're saying is that emotions are more reactive to imprinting rather than proactively clear.
Yes, well, our emotions are such, to me, emotions are energetic patterns, and we're able to feel those patterns with our hearts. So
patterns.
Yeah, that's just like energetic conditions. An emotion is energy in motion. It's an energetic condition. Some energetic conditions are pleasant to us. Some are unpleasant to us. The unpleasant one, we give names like fear, anger, and grief, or whatever we give them. The pleasant ones, we give happiness, joy, whatever we give those emotional states. But the thing is, there is a difference between an emotion and the capacity to feel them. In my matrix of the way that I work with things, the heart is the one that has the capacity to feel. It can feel emotions. It can also feel thought form. So it can feel confused, and it can also feel through the sensation of the body. So I can tap myself on the knee and feel that. That all that capacity to feel, although it's bound up in the nerves of my leg, but my capacity as the one present to feel that is related to the felt capacity of my heart. And for most of us, we can feel our thoughts and our physical sensations in our body, but we're not very good at feeling the condition of our emotional body, although we project our emotional states outwardly all the time. We blame our emotional states. We say the world is happening to me, not through me, right?
Yeah.
So when our felt perception, let me just define felt perception for you. Felt perception is the ability to feel the consequence of my presence in the world. In other words, if I want to hurt you, I will immediately feel hurt because I feel the consequence of my thoughts, words, and deeds before I even put them into play. And that's that saying, where there is love, there is no law. The reason we have to have laws in the world is because people have no felt perception. And so therefore you have to tell people how to behave because they can't feel the consequence of their presence in the world. The moment instead of trying to feel better all the time, which actually numbs my emotional body, the moment I rather focus on getting better at feeling, I will develop felt perception, and my capacity to feel governs my behavior. Because if I'm going to manipulate you, I will feel manipulated, and so I will know that that is not productive behavior. It's hurtful behavior. But for most people, they just think about something, and if they can justify it mentally, it's the way businesses are, it's the way politics is. If I can justify what I'm doing mentally, I can go ahead and do it. I don't have any self-perception about it.
So the self-perception, there's a consciousness of how one is conscious. So there's consequences. There's like psyche feedback. You know, once you are aware of how you're conscious,
yes,
you know that you are creating consequences for whatever you're doing.
Yes.
And there's a sense of accountability.
And you can feel those consequences.
You feel the consequence. And
you can feel a connection between the causal point, which is the thought, word, and deed. You can feel the connection, because the connection between any thought, word, and deed and its consequences, those connections are energetic. And so when we can feel at an energy and motion level, at an emotional level, or can feel, we awaken our emotional body awareness by integrating our fear, anger, and grief, then I can feel the consequences of my behavior in the world, and then it becomes harder and harder for me to manipulate others to benefit myself because I feel manipulated.
Well, actually, I come from more of a, you know, when I say process more mentally,
yes,
there's the emotion there also. Of course, we think in images and symbols or patterns,
yes,
of associated,
yes,
feelings, and some people think with their feelings and other people feel with their thinking.
Yeah.
I feel more with my thinking, and I can see consequences. You know, to me, it's like when you're aware of how you're conscious, then the consequences to me are more. You know, I reason. I can. It's more a reasoning through it than feeling through it. And when I say that, they're always connected, and it's just saying different things in different ways. And again, it's a matter of semantics for the beholder, you might say.
Right. Well,
but
you see, the difference is that you can reason your way into manipulating other people to make a profit out of them. So there's always a good reason to do that. In other words, you can have a good moral code and say, I don't do that. But there's always a way to justify manipulating the world to get what I want to feel better about myself or to feel good. But actually, when I awaken my felt perception and I feel the consequence of that behavior, it becomes very unattractive to me to do so, whether I reason about it or not.
Right.
So,
it's unattractive not only in a reasonable way, but it just doesn't feel good.
It doesn't feel right. No. It doesn't feel right to hurt other people so that I can make a buck. But if I'm in the business world, you know, if you want to be in the business world and really succeed in this old paradigm, then having an awakened feeling body, you know, to be a salesperson, like doing, you know, hot calls, or what they call hot sales over the phone, phoning people at 9 o'clock in the evening to try and sell them some piece of garbage.
Right.
You wouldn't be able to do that with self-perception because you would feel the impact it's having on the people who are picking up the phone.
Right.
You wouldn't have to even reason about it. You would feel it immediately, and you would go, I can't, this feels too uncomfortable to me. So we have to shut down our self-perception so we can function in the world of the old paradigm. And to me, the evolutionary shift takes place when people switch into self-perception, because actually then they don't need government. They don't need laws. They don't
right.
need the heart actually runs everything.
Well, I try to look at the whole big shift process
right.
From this perspective of once we become more conscious of how we're conscious, individually and
yes.
collectively,
yes.
and what's on the surface as far as, you know, what's coming up for, you know, in our attention field.
Right.
And then it comes back to the pure intention whereby we pay attention for the evolutionary ascension of consciousness, you know, the currency of consciousness or the currency of conscience is kind of the qualifier for whether we're reactive or proactive. Reactive
right.
in the sense of hook, emotional hooks from the, you know, from our emotional records
yeah,
that are running
totally,
us.
Totally.
And proactive in the sense of being clear
yes.
to process without those emotional hooks.
Yeah, I love that word. You see, we all have different vocabularies, and
yeah.
and so, you know, I'm listening to your vocabulary, and I'm getting you at that vocabulary. It's funny, I have a different word. You use proactive, which I love that word, because, but I use responsive. I say reactive or responsive. I'm either reacting to my experience or responding to it. And you say you're either reactive or proactive, and I see that that's a pure indication that all the words we use are just signposts to the
yep.
energetic circumstance, right?
Yeah.
But I hear your language, and that's the whole thing, is that we have to use the language that's kind of given to us through our own experience and
practice
that language. Yeah.
Well, the word proactive is being abused a lot, like any other word that becomes popular, like intention. You know?
No, absolutely. That's why I don't like the word spiritual, because to me, it's so loaded now
yeah.
that actually most people that try and be spiritual end up being inauthentic, because in order to be spiritual, you have to define what that means, and then once you enter that behavior according to your definition of spiritual, then when the moment asks us to be authentic, if that authenticity doesn't go in line with our spiritual definition, then we can't be authentic because we're being spiritual. And
yeah.
it kind of backfires. So I use the word vibration instead of spiritual, for example, in my vocabulary.
Yeah, and I like your take on that, and I was thinking about that when we talked earlier, and a lot of this is going on, like in California, there's a big distinction between being spiritual and being religious, and it's
right.
And that goes on around a lot, you know, this
yeah.
the distinction between the two, and qualifying spiritual is so often fraught with so much religious belief system, or what I call BS for short, you know, belief
yeah.
system.
yeah.
And as soon as the BS comes into it, you're into all those emotional hooks and records of
right.
being good, or, you know, in a
right.
certain way that
right.
isn't necessarily authentic.
Yeah, we get a set of rules, and then we impose those rules on every moment, and then the moment itself becomes drowned, and then we've missed the point again.
Yeah.
I call it, I don't really call it religion, I call it churchianity.
Churchianity, right. I just call it belief system or BS for short.
Yeah, absolutely. So for me, the moment is the teacher. And what I'm feeling in the moment is trying to teach me something, and my capacity to engage with it on that level. See, so for me, that's how I take my point of reference. For me,
yeah.
walking the straight and narrow is not about a moral code or a set of rules. It's about, can I feel what's really going on with me in the moment without messing with it, without interfering or going into fear about it, and as you would say, reacting to it? Can I feel what's ever happening in the moment and remain proactive or responsive? Because if I can, I'm going to stay on track on the journey that's specifically designed for my individual evolution. And if I stay on the track with the journey given to me for my individual evolution, I'm automatically staying on track with the collective evolution. But if I leave my individual journey by trying to have someone else's experience or by living according to some set of rules that I've got from somewhere, I lose my own experience as being something that's valid, and then I also lose touch with the collective experience, because the one is a fractal of the other.
This this fascinates me, this whole subject of how one becomes clear of these emotional hooks, you know, by processing.
Yes,
and
yes.
And processing the imprinting that goes on in the formative years through their parents and through their parents and their parents, because
right.
You know, the record is carried on, and you have an interesting way of explaining that in your book, and how our perceptions of reality has so much to do with this emotional imprinting of those responsible for us during our early formative years.
Right.
And
I mean, that's quite easy to explain in a common everyday occurrence, which is, it's very good to ground this work in our daily occurrence. So, for example, if I'm at work and I have a boss at work and I walk in and he behaves in a way that triggers me or upsets me, because it reminds me,
right.
I don't realize at the time, but it reminds me of my relationship with my stepfather when I was 5 years old. And so what happens is because I'm not aware of that emotional imprint from my childhood, because it gets shut down from 7 to 14 is when my emotional body awareness or my self-perception shuts down, and I start to function in the world through stories, through the mental, and then through physical circumstances. When I look at my boss, for example, and I don't see him, I actually see a memory of my stepfather, then I no longer see him, I'm seeing an illusion.
Right.
And when I start behaving around him the same way I behaved around my stepfather, I don't even know what is going on, but once I start behaving around him out of fear, anger, and grief, then I'm behaving in a deluded way.
Right.
I've actually entered an altered state, because perceptually, I've walked into a memory bank, and I'm seeing the world through the lens of that memory bank.
Yeah.
And so, while I'm in that memory bank, or I'm in that altered state, I'm going to behave one of two ways. I'm going to go tell a story to myself about what I think is going on, and that story will involve blame and all the sorts of things about why my boss is behaving this way and I don't deserve it, etc. And that story will hypnotize me, and if I tell that story enough, I will enter a behavior coming out of that story, and I will go maybe and resign from my job, or I'll do the thing that we do when we're really deluded, is go to my boss and say, look, we need to have a talk.
Yeah.
When anyone says to us, look, we need to have a talk, you know you're dealing with someone who's in a state of delusion.
Right? Yeah.
Because they're about to say, look, you're responsible for my experience, and I just want to change you quickly so that I can feel better about myself.
Oh, man. That goes on so much, and I have to. I wonder how much, you know, this the Maya or the illusion that prevails individually and collectively is how much of it. I mean, they say we use 3% of our brains. I wonder if that means that 90% of really the way we are conscious is just the imprinting.
It is, until we actually enter our emotional body consciously and impact the imprinting.
Right.
And resolve it. We are literally living from one altered state to another. In fact, there is no exception to the rule, and I looked for this exception desperately so that I could, release myself of it and find a way around it. But there is no exception to the rule that every time I get upset, every single time I get upset, I am entering a perceptual memory bank from the past.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. But the important thing to realize is when I'm confronted by my boss or I'm having this upset, there are three things going along simultaneously. There's the physical circumstance, there's the mirror, there's the story I'm telling myself about the reflection I'm seeing in the mirror, and then there's the causal point of the experience, which is how I'm feeling in that moment.
Yeah.
And what I do is I reject that feeling by projecting it out into the world through the story and into the behavior, and I try and sedate and control that feeling and make myself feel better. But actually the memory is the emotional signature, and that emotional signature is the same emotional signature that was in my parents and in their parents' parents and in their parents' parents. And whenever that emotional signature surfaced in their life experience, they had a different story and behavior around it. So the behaviors or the doing, which to me all churchianity is about doing,
yeah.
and the mental stuff I try and understand it to me, is all about the metaphysical world, are all useless in actually resolving it. They can help me release and feel better, but they can't assist me to resolve it. To resolve it, I have to enter the causal point of that memory and bring and be with it without condition. In other words, take all the conditions that are binding it, all the energetic perceptual conditions around it, and to accomplish that is purely through feeling it.
Yeah.
So what I see is that the physical world is the concrete, the mental world is the diving board, and the emotional world where the causal point is the swimming pool. And if I jump up and down on that diving board, I'm never going to resolve anything. At some point, I have to leave the diving board, the mental body, and dive into it and just purely allow myself to feel that circumstance. And to me, that's what responsive behavior is, because my awareness is now going into myself to the feeling and not outward to the story into the physical circumstance, which is the reactive behavior.
You know, I thought a lot about this process you're discussing. Over the years, you know, I've kind of tried to tune into this whole process and how everything would change in our social, political, economic institution, I mean, in the world, if from the formative years, kindergarten or earlier on, you know, there was a way to basically tune in to, I mean, there was this understanding, call it metaphysics or just common sense. Of course, that would be a real threat to the institutions as they are, in the sense that, you know, without the prevailing BS or belief system of don't deal with the cause, just let us create and manage the symptoms. You know, and then I thought about this, and I used the thought form, used the diving board. My thought form and the expression is, you know, when you get angry or emotional or the waters are turbulent, to step back, count to 10, take a deep breath, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Well, in that process, I do a visualization with a mountain lake like I like to go up to around here in Montana, you know, these mountain lakes, this really pristine environment, but the still mountain lake that reflects, you know, it's like the philosophic calm that where you still the emotional body and the still mountain lake that reflects the mountains around it, and at the same time you can see through the surface of the still waters to the subterranean, what's under the surface. You can see, you know, you can see the fish moving, you can see the structure, and of course, like it's like in a stream bed. In the still pools, you can see the bed of the stream, or the stream of consciousness is flowing through.
Right.
Where in the still pools, in the still waters, and the idea of the surface of consciousness that we're processing is like the emotional body. It's like the waters.
Yes.
And when it's still, you can see through to the subconscious terrain, the records that are there.
Right.
But when the waters are muddy, when the water is stirred up, and when things are stormy, without that philosophic calm, you can't see what's running you. You can't see you can't process the records,
right.
And you can't reflect the heavens.
Right.
In other words, the higher etheric, you know, the larger, you know, you can't, the heaven sense, you can't reflect it. And so this reflecting and perfecting, you know, from the perspective of the still waters, that metaphor, and the metaphor of the eye of the hurricane, you know, the eye of the hurricane, if you get off center, you know, the all-seeing eye of harmonious calm, you get caught up in the swirl.
Right.
and that all-seeing eye is, when I say reflecting the heavens, you know, the still waters, that philosophic calm. And it's also interesting in people that do astral projection, you know, out of the body, out of body experience, they say that quite often if they ever get stuck, in the astral plane, the key to returning or in navigating is to go back to that philosophic calm, you know, that point of of, you know, without the energy and motion of emotion, or, you know, just there's a calm, you know, and and of course, the expression is how to center and connect in the heart is a major theme with all this. And I had this same discussion along similar lines a couple weeks ago with a lady talking about quantum reality and the five steps of quantum reality, Dr. Natalie Reed. And it was the vibrational field that you're referring to, and she uses the same analogy. It's all vibration. You know, we know now that now with quantum reality, it's all energy.
Yes.
And that navigating in this field of energy, which some people would call spiritual, but she doesn't go there either because, you know, she puts it with more of a scientific frame of reference, but it's saying the same thing. We live in a quantum field of energy, and that even our perception, whatever our thoughts are, interacts on a subatomic level in the field. They know this now, that you know, quantum physics, you know, what the bleep do we know, and all those kind goes back to, they now know that the quantum field around us is impacted directly through what we think and feel. And if there's not, you know, if there's turbulence there, it creates a tremor in the force.
You know? Right, right.
And they know that we're all participants in the quantum field where there is no time or space. I mean, it goes into the morphic energy, not just of our auras and the auras of those around us, but it goes into the quantum field of the planet and the morphogenic grids and all that, you know, new understanding is coming out of the morphic fields and the morphogenic grids of the Earth and the big shift that's in process with the tectonic plates and then the mass consciousness. Fascinates me.
And absolutely, and I love that on the metaphor of sitting in the eye of the storm, because that's really the processing technique that has come out through my own experience of the work. The only thing that, because there's either release where I feel better, or there's a resolution where I go and resolve the emotional blockage or imprinting and end up getting better at feeling. Because when I fear, anger, and grief that I've suppressed out of my awareness, the very nature of suppressing it also suppresses my capacity to feel. So in the example of being with the boss at the work, instead of trying to reason or tell a story or going and carrying out a physical behavior so that I feel better about being set up in that moment, because I'm not actually being upset. I'm being set up to see something outside of me because I don't have the capacity to see it at the causal point. If instead of going and dealing with it mentally and physically, I contain an awareness of the feeling, say I'm feeling really angry, and I contain that energetic awareness in my field, I don't suppress and sedate it, I sit with it in full awareness and say, I hold it throughout the day and I get to my home in the evening and I sit with it and I say, okay, what happened to me during the day today? What was that thing that really triggered me? And I bring an awareness of that back up into my field, and I will notice that there's the feeling of anger, but there's also a physical feeling within my body where that anger is centered. And if I put my attention on that place and stay aware of the anger and be with it without condition, in other words, watch it like I watch a bird in a tree or that I listen to a song on the radio, because when you're watching a bird, you can't fiddle with it. You can't make it do anything. And if you're listening to a song, you can't change the song on the radio. You just listen to it. So if I listen to that experience and I sit in the center of it, which is the eye of the tornado or whatever we're talking of the storm, and I sit in the midst of that anger and I allow it to be there, that energy knows how to come to a point of resolution. Just like if you pour water over somebody, you don't need to give that water a GPS system to find its way down to the ground. It has an innate intelligence of how to move. Energy has an innate intelligence of its own, but it's blocked because we're constantly suppressing and sedating these emotional circumstances without being aware of them. If I let my anger just allow it to be there, it goes through an energetic process and comes to a point of resolution, which may involve tears, it may involve feeling hot and cold, whatever it is for me is valid. But once it comes to a point of resolution, I will enter a state of stillness. And in that state of stillness, there will be great insight into what the cause of that initially was.
Yeah.
And in that state of stillness is where I see the vibrational, I sort of awaken to that vibrational awareness in a greater capacity through the anger, not by pushing it away, but actually going through the storm of it, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's the test that's best.
Yes.
Back to being in the storm or in the world, but not of the world.
Yes. And the barometer of the success is that I should be able to then go to work the next day and see my boss and not see my stepfather and actually see him, who he really is, and be in the moment with him and have quite an intimate encounter with him when I'm at work, because that energetic blockage between us, because he was reflecting something which had nothing to do with him, he was just being in the mirror for it in that moment. If I actually bring that energetic circumstance to resolution, if I do inside, and if I just make the adjustments internally, the impact of it is that there will be an external movement in the world around me that will be undeniable. In other words, impacting the causal point of my emotional body condition will have an impact on my 3D experience. That's how I know, that's what alchemy is.
When
I take the base experience and I turn it into gold.
Back to cause and effect, action, reaction, stimulus,
response.
Key into the cause and transmute it all, cause, effect, record, and memory.
Right. And so it really is quite scientific. It doesn't require anything but applying certain principles of going to the causal point, applying being without condition, which is the same way of saying unconditional love. We just have another, you know, that's the catchphrase for it these days, but being with it without placing conditions on it allows it to move freely and come to a point of resolution, instead of using fear and anger and grief to try and manipulate it, instead of now we allow it to go to its point of resolution, and that internal movement will be mirrored in my outer experience.
Wow. Well, I know that you have some CDs and some DVDs, and... Okay, so I'm going to wrap her up and look forward to talking with you again soon.
Okay.
Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. Thanks for a great conversation.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this presentation on Cosmic Love. I hope you have enjoyed receiving this as much as I have enjoyed giving it. There is a new relationship with all humanity that is maturing with the new synchronicity of instant, everywhere, interactive, net reality. Cosmic Love is the heart of this synchronicity. Tools and processes that empower the wisdom of Cosmic Love is the purpose of the Worldwide Love Foundation. The family of man is now making a quantum leap into a new consciousness as never before in history. Our awareness as humankind is expanding, and the internet reflects that multidimensional expansion of consciousness into new realms of omniscience, omnipresence, and omnipotence in the power of cosmic love. This has huge implications. The more information we have, the greater the need to get it all in order. The more knowledge power we have, the greater the need for the wisdom of cosmic love. That should be common sense, and it's time to make common sense more common. If you agree that the American Revolution was huge for freedom and opportunity in the world, look what's happening to the whole world now. A new connection with cosmic love is positioning the golden rule, law, language for a golden age in our spirit, our minds, our hearts, and the soul of humanity. We're on the threshold of a global revolution that is awakening the angels of our better nature. Let's be honest and reason together. Cosmic love has always been the golden rule, law, language for every golden age in cosmic history. Some things don't change, only the ability of the human mind to grasp the full implications of the world in which we now live. That has changed with the internet, and like an adolescent who is not an adult yet, but not a child either, the internet is now installed, operational, and ready to take our personal and planetary consciousness to the next level. That would be cosmic love, and the foundation principles for this is the love model, a universal law language interface for net reality that represents the five-dimensional intelligence that can fulfill a global revolution in higher consciousness. Check it out for yourself. See how it works. Consider the role you can play and how you can benefit. The sooner you get the vision of this cosmic love thing, the sooner you can profit from a wholly new economy that will transform all our social networks with extraordinary abundance of everything held sacred by free people worldwide. There is a new intelligence that is defining and refining humanity's evolutionary ascent. The higher the intelligence of universal cosmic love, the greater the results. The gateway to higher consciousness is, in fact, the language of consciousness. The five-dimensional intelligence that cosmic love frames in form and frequency, as in frequently. Once you get it, how the Holy Spirit of love and action can heal our individual and collective conscience, it will become self-evident how cosmic love can nurture and culture the net reality that brings a Holy Spirit to the collective consciousness of humanity. Love heals all, always has, always will. The more cosmic and universal the vision of love, the greater the results. Welcome to the opportunity. It's time to link the light workers who are love makers. The internet now provides this opportunity for extraordinary synchronicity as will empower wisdom with cosmic love. Someone had to do it. Now you can. Network for the net worth of this new net reality. You have the vision now before you. What you do with it can change your world and the world at large. We are all co-creators in the cosmic scheme of cosmic love. The great spirit of great love is the great opportunity that genuine freedom gives all of us. Heaven knows that there is nothing more valuable than the vision of cosmic love that has found its time. Experience the Worldwide Love Foundation in your consciousness, being, and world. Care enough to share this vision of great opportunity. Step into the circle of global connection as you center and connect with the five-dimensional intelligence of cosmic love that provides the cultural DNA for a golden age on Earth. Miracles happen when cosmic love is conceived, believed, and achieved. You are that miracle when you become the cosmic love you want to see in the world. Own this vision as your own. Embrace the intrinsic virtue of cosmic love. Make the vow to do what you can because you can. Claim the victory for all mankind aspiring to live as kind men. Here's to winning from the beginning of a global revolution that will finish worldwide with the great experiment and representative government gave humanity with the American Revolution. Heaven on earth is virtually in your hands. Do you want the keys to the kingdom? Are you ready to assemble the components to the capstone of cosmic love vision? Discover the five-dimensional intelligence that will empower your own virtually untapped gifts and talents. Consider how you can make a difference, if not the difference. It's your life, your world. Take command. Give cosmic love the chance that you want for all mankind. Now you can. See for yourself. Do it for cosmic love, and heaven knows cosmic love will bless your life far beyond this one. Sooner or later, what goes around comes around. You can call that good karma, or the justice of cosmic law, or just the blessings of cosmic love. It's the same thing. The abundant life is born in abundant love. The more cosmic that love, the more abundant is your life. Personally, I can't think of anything better to do, and I hope you feel the same way. So keep in touch with cosmic love. It only gets better as you pay attention. This is how cosmic love works. Pay attention because attention pays in ways that make cosmic love the new currency for global peace and prosperity. Your attention is your consciousness. The next economy for planetary civilization will pay attention to the value of virtue, the virtue of cosmic love. The family of man and our global village must be connected to this one virtue. We must pay attention to the first principles of higher consciousness if we are to transcend the old paradigms of scarcity consciousness that scarcity economics has created. This is the whole point of cosmic love. We won't heal our personal and planetary problems with the same consciousness that created the problems. The best hope for humanity is the charity of goodwill among mankind. This is the charity of cosmic love in action. This is the Holy Spirit of cosmic love in man that raises mankind with loving kindness. I hope you appreciate this message and share it with others. That may be just your circle of influence with family and friends, or it may be every news group or blog on the internet where lightworkers and enlightened netizens, global citizens, hang out. By the grace of cosmic love, enough good people will do enough soon enough to quickly turn the tide of global consciousness from the paradigm of scarcity to the paradigm of abundance that cosmic love cultures. May the quickening and awakening of consciousness begin with you and your own personal evolution in higher consciousness. Thanks again for listening to Cosmic Love.
$5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Van Vonderen from A&E's show Intervention, and you're listening to bbsradio.com.